women aren't the only ones affected by the tragedy of a miscarriage. Let's talk about it with Eric Shoemaker on Steve Brown, Etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, Etc.
Hey, we're glad you're here. You do have a seat at our table, and we're glad you occupy it regularly. In case you're wondering, I'm Steve, the aforementioned old white guy. Matthew Porter is here. He's our executive producer. Matthew, did you say you took your wife clubbing last weekend?
Yeah, well, the Sam's Club. But it still counts.
No, it doesn't.
No? All right.
Our producer, Jinx, is working hard in this little glass booth. 4th of July is coming up, and Jinx's favorite founding father is Sam Adams. And I'm just going to leave it there. Our video director, John Myers, is in his tech bunker. John's kids are in vacation Bible school this week. This year's theme is, you're welcome, parents. Don't forget to tithe. It's summer. And George Bingham is the president of Key Life. George isn't a pastor, but he does enjoy golf and taking Mondays off. And Kathy Wyatt is the soft, feminine side of the program. Last time Kathy traveled, she brought back chocolate pretzels for us. Kathy, are you doing any more traveling anytime soon?
No, I'm done. I'm absolutely done. In fact, I said to my brother after the second trip to Pennsylvania in 2 weeks, I said, you don't have any more grandchildren that I don't know about, do you? Because I'm done. I am not coming back here again. So
how many graduations have you gone to?
Just two, but you know, they were, never mind. It was way too complicated.
More importantly, where's the pretzels?
Gone. Gone.
I see how you
quickly.
Are. I see how you are.
Our guest during this program is one of our favorite guys. He's a Baptist, but I forgive him for that. They grow like weeds everywhere and you can't get rid of them. So you just have to deal with it. If Eric really wanted to get to heaven, he would become a Presbyterian. Mm. And if I were him, I wouldn't take a chance. But at any rate, he's a songwriter. He's a podcaster. He serves as a staff elder at Grand Avenue Baptist Church in Ames, Iowa. He holds a BA in communications and an MDiv from Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Eric's latest book, which I hold in my nicotine-stained fingers, is titled Ours, Biblical Comfort for Men Grieving a Miscarriage. Eric, I got a confession to make. When Kathy told me what we were going to be doing, I had mixed feelings. Hmm. It's kind of like watching your mother-in-law go off a cliff in your new Cadillac. I mean, I like you a lot, but I thought, what? We're going to, and I began to realize I've never dealt with this issue. Hmm. You tell us that 20% of the couples have experienced that in this country. And I wasn't surprised because I've been through that with a lot of people. Hmm. It hasn't been my area of grief, except in the sense that I can taste the tears of people that I love. But it's just never been a very big issue. And as I read your book, I began to see, man, this is something big, and I missed it. So this interview and your book is instructive for me and eye-opening for me, too. Mm. Eric, you've been there. You've done that. Tell us your story and then how this book came about.
Yeah. Well, like you, I really hadn't thought much about men and miscarriage. And honestly, I hadn't really thought for most of my life much about miscarriage. I think the first time I ever heard about miscarriage was, I think I was in high school and had heard that someone had miscarried a baby. And I can't remember ever hearing it come up in conversation again until Jenny and I were married and we were in seminary and couples our age were starting to get pregnant. And we heard about more and more people having miscarriages. And I think the first time I ever heard about how it affected men was Russell Moore was a theology professor of mine. And they were in the first stages of adopting their boys from Russia. And he would share in class about how their miscarriages, they'd had multiple miscarriages, had affected him. And first time I ever even thought about it affecting fathers. And it makes total sense. You know, it takes a mom and a dad, you know, a man and a woman to make a baby. And most women I know in you know, most situations, assuming it's a healthy situation, want the dad to be involved and interested in the pregnancy and labor and delivery and, you know, raising the child. We should expect, and I think we should want men to be interested when that baby is lost in the womb. And we should expect him to grieve because, you know, he's not, you know, the mother goes through a miscarriage, obviously in physical ways that a father could never do. You know, her body has changed and become pregnant. And in the miscarriage, it goes through the whole process of miscarrying the baby and is going through the process of returning to not being pregnant. A guy doesn't feel those things. He doesn't experience those things, but he has hopes and dreams about having a baby, you know, playing football in the backyard or playing dolls with his daughter or whatever it is. And he's looking forward to that. And this is a real loss. And so my wife and I had three children without ever experiencing this. And then we had a very early miscarriage that Jenny suspected she might be pregnant, took a pregnancy test. It was positive. And the next day there was some blood and we might not have noticed if she hadn't taken the test, but went into the doctor's office and confirmed. And then we had our daughter, number four. And then we had two miscarriages in a row that were fairly late. And one of those, it was an odd set of circumstances that the third miscarriage, the second of the two in a row was, we were in the hospital because it was late enough that she was induced and delivered very, very small baby. But it was over the period of the due date for the previous miscarriage. And so that was a real odd juxtaposition of feelings. You know, the week we expected to be in the hospital delivering a baby and going home with a baby, we're in the hospital that week and, it's a, you know, delivering a very, very small child that we could hold in the palm of our hands. And then, you know, I'm wheeling her out of the hospital in a wheelchair. Instead of carrying our newborn, she's, carrying a plant and a sympathy card. And that whole experience of being in the hospital, for a miscarriage was, and we can talk about that later. But that was just, you know, they weren't prepared. In some ways, they were prepared. They had put a little rose on the hospital room door so that, you know, it'd be a signal of what was going on in the room. And they had us in a different wing, so we weren't around the other couples. But you still heard the chime go off every time a live baby was born. And you'd call down to the nurse's station, and it wasn't marked there. They didn't understand what you were talking about. You had to relive it each time and tell them what was happening in your room. And so that happened. And then, in the Lord's kindness, we had number five, our youngest boy, who is, just a happy, happy baby. Well, he's not a baby anymore. He's 10 years old, but, he, in God's timing, happened to be delivered, that same week. And so, what would have been the pain of the 1 year anniversary, was a great time of joy having him. And then, a few years later, we thought we were done and had a surprise pregnancy. And so that was a surprise for us. We had to go through the whole, like, okay, we're having another baby. We're several years older. We don't think we can do this again. And then about the time that we had come around to, okay, we're ready for this. We're happy God's given this. We're going to do it. God will provide. Then we realized she was having a miscarriage. And so each of them was really unique and gave us different insight into what people experience at various stages of pregnancy and various situations in families.
We're about finished with this segment, but I'll be interested on the other side of the break about whether or not you shared your feelings publicly, and if you did, the kinds of reactions that you got when you did that. I suspect you, but we'll find out when we talk to you then. But I suspect you discovered things you didn't know about the people in your congregation.
Yep.
We're talking with Eric Shoemaker, and his book is Ours, Biblical Comfort for Men Grieving Miscarriage. It may not be something you think about very often, but I've had an education over the last few hours, and Eric is in the process, if you're a guy, of giving you one too. So don't you dare leave. You need this.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, thanks for joining us. We're talking to author Eric Shoemaker. Eric's new book is called Ours, Biblical Comfort for Men Grieving Miscarriage. Sometimes we wish we could keep the cameras and the microphones on during the breaks, because we were talking about a guy in England who went to give blood. He was
60-something, yeah.
And they refused to take his blood because he refused to tell them that he was pregnant. And our discussion was certainly more fun than anything we ever do on the air. And one of these days, we're going to take outtakes and sell them and make some money for Key Life. Eric, on the other side of the break, I was asking you if you shared this publicly, maybe even in a sermon or maybe individually, and the kinds of reactions that you got.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And I think it's part of the reason this book, I think, is needed. You know, when we had the miscarriage, there were two of those miscarriages we shared publicly with our congregation because we'd already announced that we were pregnant, or that Jenny was pregnant. You know, that was interesting because we announced it over email list. I don't know if I shared much in the sermon or not, but Jenny, my wife, doesn't like to be the center of attention. She's not comfortable having all the eyes on her. And so she said her biggest fear in going back to church the first Sunday after, you know, we learned about miscarriage was that no one would talk to her about it and that everyone would talk to her about it. Yeah. You know, she wanted someone to notice her grieving, but she didn't want to have to stand in the center of a circle of people and talk about it and cry. And so I didn't really know what to expect. And, after I think that hospital stay that I mentioned, I remember one man coming up and giving me a hug as we walked in, and I could be forgetting people. From what I remember, most of the time, the men who would talk to me about it would be asking me how Jenny's doing. Or what they could do to help out with the kids or something like that. But rarely, I can't remember many men asking me like, how are you doing in your heart? Like, what are you going through right now? And so then it was, a few years ago when I got here to our present church, Emily Jensen of Risen Motherhood, she asked me if I would write an article for the Risen Motherhood blog on helping wives, mothers, understand what their husbands are going through when they face miscarriage. Because that was a question they'd been getting, like, how do I help my husband through this? There's nothing out there for men. And so I wrote an article called Dad's Hurt Too, and it chronicled our miscarriage journey, went through some of the feelings that and that was the first time I really sat down and processed what I felt. And I addressed the shame I felt, the anger I felt, I think sometimes the worry that I felt, and some other stuff. It's been too long ago. I can't remember what I wrote in that article. I can't remember what I preached last Sunday. The response I got, and we can explore some of those too if you want to hear about any of those, but the response I got was immediately I heard from both a number of women and men who were just incredibly thankful that somebody had written something to help fathers who were grieving miscarriage. Wives who were like, my husband's not doing well, and I've been searching the internet for something to help him. And, you know, thank you so much. This is desperately needed. And then men who would contact me and say, I've shared with my small group, I've gone in to talk to my pastor about it, and they just don't know what to do with me. How to help a man grieving miscarriage. And they said, you know, your article is the first thing that I've read or heard that's made me feel seen and understood. And so I contributed a testimony to Abby Wedgeworth's book, Held, which is 31 devotions on miscarriage. And it's aimed at women who are going through this. And so she wanted a little testimony to help the women understand what their husbands are going through. And so when I saw the book and how well done it was, it's just a beautiful book, you know, and well packaged and all that, I wrote Carl at the Good Book Company and said, you really need to write one of these, produce one of these for men, and I want to write it. And they were gracious enough to say, we like what you've done in that article. We want you to do a whole book. And they said, you know, no one's ever done this. Like, we can't find any Christian resource that's aimed specifically at men. And so we're going to take a little risk here, but I'm glad they've believed in it. And, in the build up to this releasing, I've just heard from so many men who've said, we want this, we need this, and we're so glad it's happening.
Yeah. Do you think and I know you've written about women and beautifully and with great insight, but do you think maybe the macho man, I got to protect, help my wife, this isn't about me, I can't hurt because I'm a guy thing plays into that?
I think it does that whole mindset does an incredible amount of damage to men who are grieving miscarriage because, I need to be this protector and this provider. And miscarriage is one of those things you face as a husband and as a father, where there is absolutely nothing you could have done to protect your wife or your child from this. no way that you could have prevented it. It's totally out of your hands. And so that can create some shame of, what does this say about my manhood that I've failed here? And it can also be, I need to stay strong. You know, I need to put on this, I'm being strong for my wife and for my family and put on a brave face and just give out platitudes about how God's helping me through it and all that. And I think the other thing too is, you know, because I need to be this protector of my wife, well, I can't be sharing about my grief. I can't be weeping because, she's the one that's miscarrying. And so, you know, I need to let her grieve. I don't need to let her be sad. But what I hear from women is, one, I don't know how my husband's doing because he won't share anything. Like, I'm worried about whether or not he's okay. And then if he's not sharing anything or he's not processing his grief, then she says, I feel like I'm mourning this miscarriage alone. I feel like I'm by myself in this. This was our child, but I have to suffer by myself. And he's not part of this with me. And that hurts her too.
Oh my. As Lewis said in his science fiction trilogy, I'm getting older and older listening to you. In other words, I'm learning things I didn't know before and thinking thoughts I didn't think. Hey, guys, you got to get this book. And I'm not using guys generically. I mean men. Read this book. It'll be good for you. And open up doors that you'll rejoice that you can walk through. We'll be back.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know, a gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
Hey, thanks for joining us. We're hanging out with podcaster, songwriter, and author, and one of our favorite people, Eric Shoemaker. You can keep up with him at emschumacher.com on Twitter. I'm doing the best I can. Leave me alone. And on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram at Mocker. Well, it's spelled Mocker. It's spelled Mocker.
Yeah, it's been a lifetime of confusion.
Like the last minute of the program, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just go to the show notes or whatever.
We'll put the links in the description. It's good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Eric, really love the book. I'm one of the folks you wrote the book for. It took me and the missus, several years of trying to get pregnant unexpectedly. Did not think it would, take that long, but nobody does expect that. And then we lost early on, very early on. And that kind of surprise at a guy's sense of loss. Even one night I was just talking to the wife and I was just, a mess. Mm-hmm. I was undone. And she was kind of surprised. I don't know, surprised that I was feeling that or surprised that maybe I hadn't shown that before. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because if a guy was up for some sort of promotion and it passed him by, you could understand that. Or some other great thing. And you're like, no, I get that. You're like, well, this was going to be your son or your daughter, and now it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't take a big mental leap for me, at least, to understand that's an irrevocable loss, that, you know, you had your heart set on something as a given and you're looking forward to it, and it's gone forever, even if it was just this tiny little soul. So I love that you wrote the book. You know, you wrote something really profound in there, a lot of things, but that when you're reeling from that, you've got a lot of big questions, and sometimes you could, in the fog of that, start to get some not theologically correct ideas. I wonder if you could speak a little bit about that. You know, people thinking, well, God, is this God punishing us for something? You know, talk a little bit about that. Some of the kind of the false ideas that can kind of swirl around in this moment.
Yeah. I think that's great. I'm glad that you brought it up, and I'm sorry that Matthew, that you and your wife went through that experience.
Thank you.
It's hard, and thanks for sharing that here. Sometimes people can think that, you know, when you read that children are a blessing from the Lord, which is absolutely true. And the Lord's taken away a blessing, or he's never allowed you to get pregnant, you know, and to have this blessing. And so your mind can automatically go, well, if we're not blessed, we must be cursed. Mm. And that's a good question to be asking. And it's especially as you move through the Old Testament and that some of the curses that were put on nations and were put on Israel were your women will miscarry, or I'll give you barrenness. And, you know, that's part of God's covenant with them. You know, we're not under that covenant anymore. But that doesn't mean that every individual miscarriage, even in that time, was a covenant curse. You know, it's part of living in a world that's cursed, you know, because of the fall, because of sin, we live in a world that's broken. That's why we all die, and death can happen at any time, you know, any age, even in the womb. And so, but for your listeners, the format of the book is I've broken up the Gospel of Luke into the 31 chunks. And so, a guy will read a short devotion out of a portion of Luke. And I wanted men who would be willing to sit down and read a book just to come face to face with Jesus and walk through this with him, because he gets suffering, and he does suffer. And so he's the perfect companion. His story is more important than mine. And I love how Luke opens, you know, with Zechariah and Elizabeth, and it opens with barrenness. You know, they are a barren couple. And Luke says that they are a righteous couple. They were righteous. And so right off the bat, you get to see that infertility is not a curse. Infertility, you can be infertile and be a couple that God smiles on and is called righteous in Scripture. And so, and then also, as Elizabeth gets pregnant and then Mary gets pregnant, you see God's concern about children in the womb. It's something that he is very interested in. Not to mention the fact that the second person of the Trinity became a child in the womb. And so, those are the kind of false ideas we can sometimes get into our head.
Hmm. Good stuff. We're talking, the name of the book, by the way, this would be a good book for men's small groups. And because it's a great Bible study, it'd be good for a lot of different situations. It's called Ours, Biblical Comfort for Men Grieving Miscarriage. Eric Shoemaker is the author. And this hour, and we're going to continue it on the other side of the break, has been a revelation to me, and a good one. So there'll be more. Don't go anywhere.
It was
was irritated when the electricity went out. No television, no music, no Netflix. Then he discovered that the battery on his smartphone was dead. He decided to make some coffee, but when he went to the kitchen, he realized that without electricity, he couldn't even do that. Then he noticed his wife in the kitchen, and he sat down and talked to her. He said later, "You know, she seemed like a very nice lady." I know, technology's good, but sometimes go talk to somebody face to face. You might be surprised how nice and real they are. It's messy sometimes, but Jesus would like it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. Talking with Eric Shoemaker. If you're a guy, or you're married to a guy, your significant other is a guy, and you've gone through a miscarriage, you maybe didn't know what was going on in his heart. And we're checking hearts on this particular broadcast.
Eric, the fact that we've already sort of alluded to the fact that nobody's written a book on this before. And so the question sort of comes to mind, well, why not? But I think that, and I could be totally wrong, but I think it sort of is obvious that the whole process of thinking about men, I mean, everybody knows that it takes two people as far as, you know, as far as making a baby is concerned. But for years and years and years, I mean, men were just relegated to, I mean, back in my day when people that I went to school with, college with and everything were getting married and having babies, et cetera, men didn't go to doctor's appointments. They weren't allowed in the delivery room. I mean, they weren't allowed to do anything. It's like, come pick me up, honey, after this is over. I'll call you when we can come home, kind of thing. Because they weren't, I remember the pastor of my home church, his third child was born on Christmas Day, which happened to be a Sunday. He took her to the hospital, went back and preached two services at the church, and then went back later on in the day, you know, to say hi to her. I mean, you know, not because he was a bad dad or anything like that, but that he just wasn't allowed to do that. So as times have changed over the last, you know, however many years, and men are more involved, I think it's obvious that people are beginning to realize that there's a sensitivity there that I think maybe men were not even ever allowed to understand or articulate.
Good point.
I mean, is that part of the reason why this is becoming more prevalent in terms of thinking?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's a good change that men are able to be more involved in the pregnancy and go to appointments, see the baby on the ultrasound, be in there for labor and delivery. And, you know, you get to meet your baby and hold your baby right afterwards, as opposed to seeing your baby for the first time through a glass window in the nursery. And I think it's a real good change, but it also makes them more acquainted and familiar with the grief that comes with a miscarriage.
Exactly.
I think it's
probably
a great point,
the reason I'm so callous. I fainted when our babies were born. They spent more medical attention on me than they did on my wife. George,
the big baby.
Yeah, the big baby. Yeah.
Did more smoking at that point. Eric, you mentioned, and I don't know whether it ends up being another sort of dimension to the experience sometimes or for some people. You mentioned at one point that in one of the miscarriages, it became kind of an emergency medical situation for your wife. And with my wife, we experienced, a early miscarriage and then two that were ectopic, which are very early, but, again, end up almost like emergency situations. Yeah. And it seems like that can kind of add a little dimension of fear associated with grief and so forth. Mm-hmm. What thoughts would you offer in that kind of context in your experience with that?
Yeah, I think fathers are often overlooked in the emergency context. I think that's a great question. And I would especially say if you're someone listening who's in the medical realm, a nurse, a doctor, you know, someone who assists in the labor and delivery realm or in an emergency room, that's something to pay attention to. Because we had gone in because my wife didn't want to have the DNC performed. And so she was able to labor and deliver. But what ended up happening was that after the baby delivered, then she was losing blood and needed to go in and have a procedure done anyway. And so they just whisked her out of the room. They said, we have to take her into emergency surgery. And then I was just sitting in the room all by myself. And you know, no one really coming to update me. I was sitting there by myself, and that was a little scary time, you know, wondering, I lost my baby. I don't really know what's going on with my wife right now. And I felt like, you know, the place where we were at, I mentioned they put us in a different wing and all that, but there was an incident I talk about in the book where, in that particular place, for the fathers to get meals, they weren't catered to the room. You had to go down to a little cafeteria and get your meal. So I just went down and it was time to get the meals. And of course the room's just full of men who are there, and they're all asking about and talking about the babies they've had and showing each other pictures and all that. And they get around to me and, hey, what did you have? And I'm just like, oh man, I have to introduce this grief into this happiness, you know, and told them, you know, and the energy just like the oxygen got sucked out of the room, you know, and all that. And I just started waiting until the last 10 minutes that the meals were available. So I wouldn't have to do that to somebody else. And even like I mentioned, like when we were holding the little baby in our room, we wanted to see the little baby and we could count the fingers and all that. And that was just really important to us. I don't think everyone has to do that. But when we called back to the nurse's station and I said, you know, we'd like someone to come pick up our baby. And she's like, well, we just don't have any. She was like, well, why don't you want your baby in the room? And well, we're ready to go home. And so we need you to come get the baby. Well, why do you need to get the, you know? And I finally had to say, you know, we miscarried, and so the baby's not alive. And she was like, oh, you know, I'm so sorry. And so just to be able to prep staff, mm-hmm. you know, even when I mentioned earlier, wheeling her out, carrying a plant, potted plant, like, just to prep the desk, front desk staff, because, you know, they all stand up to see the baby that's coming out and you could kind of tell their eyes light up as you're wheeling someone down the hall, you know, you get near the desk and they stand up to look over and they see a plant. And so, I think just prepping the staff for who's there and what's going on, better would have served, me and probably lots of other men well.
Mm-hmm. Eric, this has been a great hour of learning and sensitivity, being aware. And your bottom line is that God is faithful.
Yes. Yeah.
And you don't have to be bitter or angry. He'll be there.
Yeah.
Guy that was going through dementia, God said to him, when you go into the mist, I'll go with you.
Yeah.
And he does. Eric, we love you, man. And we love your books. Keep writing, and we'll talk to you even if you don't, but it's nice to have a book.
Yeah, well, we'll try. Thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
It's been fun.
Thanks.
Guys, we're going to back out for a little bit, and then we're going to come back and tell you who we're going to do it unto next week. This book is called Ours, Biblical Comfort for Men Grieving Miscarriage. Get it and read it. You'll learn, you'll grow, and you'll get closer to Jesus.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, thanks for spending this hour with us. By the way, if you use the YouVersion Bible Study app, we now have a Key Life devotional you can check out on said app. It's called Born Free. You can get all the details at keylife.org/born free. That's a great hour. George was saying when we were off the air that with this Roe v. Wade thing that's imminent, the decision and the anger and the division and the bad stuff that's a part of it, he was wondering if maybe we should have addressed that with Eric. You know, there's a sense in which we did. If you are pro-abortion and you're listening or you're watching, I hope this gave you some thoughts that you don't think very often. You know, babies in the womb are people in the womb. And we gradually are becoming a death culture. And it's not good. It's not good for our culture. It's not good for our country. It's not good for the world. And I dread when the decision is finally announced, it's going to be awful. It's going to be plain awful. But if you know the truth, and you heard the truth today on this broadcast with Eric, and you'll find out the truth and the grief that follows men after a miscarriage and women and mothers, I would urge you to rethink your views and to look at Scripture and to say, man, we have gone down a bad road. And it's a road I understand. I really do. I have compassion for those of you who are in that camp and those of you who have had an abortion. That's awful. But think about these things. They're really important. And life is really important. Kathy, who's going to be on next week?
Next week, we have Michael Reeves, Dr. Michael Reeves, and we've already talked with him, and his book is titled Gospel People Call for Evangelical Integrity, and it was a great, great interview, and besides that, he's a Brit, so he talks great.
Funny.
No, he talks great.
You know, they say if you can have that accent and you're a preacher, it's worth $5,000 more a year. And if it's Scottish, it's worth $10,000 a year.
Who said that?
Probably more for Presbyterians than Baptists.
Yeah.
Guys, we're out of here. We hope, and it's our fond hope, that you'll join us next week, same time, same place. And between now and then, as always, don't do anything we wouldn't. And that, of course, gives you a wide, wide berth.